All right, I'm sitting in the back here at the secondhand patio furniture I got for $20 on Facebook Marketplace. And I'm drinking a toast right now of this fine whiskey. What is it, Elijah Craig or... I can't remember what it is. It says Jim Beam on the glass. It's not Jim Beam. It's, it's not top shelf, and it's not bottom shelf. It's, like, right there in the middle, like, at eye level. Right? That's the kind of whiskey I'm drinking. Yes, it is a special occasion. Tomorrow, I walk across the stage, and I graduate, get my degree. Masters of Arts in English Literature. There's the drink. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Am I recording?
I think I am.
Mark one. Yes. This is Mike Booty, the Midnight Citizens. First show I've done since February. Yes, February. That was the show I did right before I got COVID. I was planning on doing more shows. And I was indeed in the middle of, like, recording a show a few days after I released the last one in February. And in the middle of recording it, my wife called me and she's like, I have COVID. You got to come home. You can't be out, because I was out working. So I went home, and yeah, lo and behold, a couple days later, I got COVID too. And, yeah, from there on, that just kind of stalled my COVID plans, because that put everything a week behind, you know, dealing with graduate school. And, right. So, yeah, I'm just now getting back around to it, right? Recording the show that I've been doing off and on now since 2010. A lot of stuff has happened, right? When I first started the show, in January of 2010, I was single. I was living in, like, a house with three other guys. My life was essentially a sitcom from the 90s. And then I met my girlfriend, and now she's my wife. Right? Yeah, in 2010, I don't even think I had gone back to school the first time. So, yeah, a lot of stuff has changed, right? All these jobs. And, yeah, tomorrow I kind of close the chapter, I guess you could say. So, I was teaching high school. I was in about the third year of teaching high school, I think, and I just kind of made this decision to go back to school. And, my interest has always been in literature, you know, the study of books. Reading books and writing about books and all that. And I wanted to get a Master's of Art in literature 12 years ago when I went back to school the first time. And I decided against it. I decided instead to go the education route. Because one thing, it was, you know, shorter. It's like they have this thing that they call the alternative masters. Here in Alabama, I don't know where it is, where you are, but, they allow you to go back to school, and essentially, like, in 2 years, you get a master's, and you're eligible, and certified to teach in the state of Alabama. And, if you want to go someplace else, you know, you have to take, like, further certification and all that stuff. And, you know, it's a very messed up thing, the education system in America, you know. It's not like you get some kind of, like, a national certification. You can get, like, a national board certification, but you have to be, like, a teacher for 3 years, and you have to jump through all these hoops and everything. And that still doesn't guarantee you that every state is going to recognize it. It's a very complex web of standards. So, yeah, but nevertheless, I like, decided to go into education because I figured back in 2010, the education job market, especially for secondary teachers, you know, like teachers who teach grades 6 through 12 was very, very scarce. The job market was really terrible. Because again, a lot of these teachers, they get into these public teaching jobs and they get tenure and they stay there forever. They spend their entire careers in these schools holding these positions so that they can get, obviously, retirement, state benefits and all that. So the job market, 13 years ago when I went back to school was really terrible. And obviously I could go and get a master's of art and literature and be able to, teach high school. I could get certified in that. But what they were really looking for is like people in education. So I went the safe route, the route that I really did not want to take just so that I could secure a job. And, ironically, pretty much as soon as I, got out of school, the job market kind of like freed up all of a sudden for, and today it's like really like anybody can get a job teaching. I mean, it's the job market has become so open, at least where I am, but I think it's also, nationwide, because there seems to be this like general belief, among most Americans that the public education system is failing. And, people watch these videos on YouTube. I think YouTube and Reddit, all these websites, they probably play into it a little bit because, people go on and they see videos of like kids throwing things at teachers and kids just refusing to turn off cell phones and the teachers going ballistic on them. And they're like, I don't want to do that job. No way. No, thank you. Right. And it's less and less people these days want to go into teaching. And I kind of, to a degree, don't blame them. So I'm going off the rails a little bit, which is what I do on this show, right? Always. I decided to take that safe route into education. So yeah, I got out of school in 2013, and from there worked as the education director for a nonprofit park here in Birmingham, and did that for a few years, got married in that time, and then that job led to me teaching English at a private high school here in Birmingham, and I did that for 5 years. And I really did enjoy that job, quite a bit. It was really kind of the dream position that I wanted. I got to go in there and kind of design my own curriculum and decide what I wanted to teach. And, if things weren't working, I could always change up the lesson plans to get them working. And had really great kids. And I really did enjoy that job quite a lot. But, by the third year, though, and this was like the COVID year, 2020, this is like 2019 leading into 2020, right? I just kind of wanted to, I was really like feeling the FOMO of just having a full-fledged literature degree because I was going to class every day and just thinking about the fact that it's like a very good thing to be able to like go to a job where you get to kind of do things that you love all day long. And with teaching high school, obviously, there's a lot of baggage that comes with that that's not fun. Administrative tasks and kind of dealing with disruptions and things like that. But at the end of the day, I got to go in and, talk about, like, The Great Gatsby or Ready Player One or, William Faulkner short stories and things like that. And I think my passion for discussing literature and discussing like themes, it did bleed onto the kids a little bit. Like the kids really enjoyed it, I think to a degree. And I was sort of realizing by about the second or third year, I think I'm really good at this. Like I don't think not necessarily teaching, but just having a natural passion for literature. And I realized by that third year that I really wanted to pursue this. I wanted to actually go and just really learn the intricacies of dissecting English literature. And I wanted to write papers, and I just like, and also at that point, and I guess I had always known, high school was not going to be, the end all be all for me. I never really intended to teach high school, to let that be the end. And I wanted to step up and I wanted to teach college and, you know, perhaps be a college professor someday. I don't know. That'd be nice. And so, yeah, I applied to the graduate school at the university here in town, and I got in, and that was fantastic, right? Ended up taking classes, like I took one class every semester for about the next year and a half, and it became apparent very quickly that that was not going to work. It was going to take me about 8 years if I only took one class every semester. And so I kind of came to a decision point. I took a semester off because I was paying for all of these classes, obviously, out of my own pocket. So, you know, it was about $1,500 a semester, which isn't that bad. But still, that's a lot of money to kind of be throwing at something that you're not really sure why you're doing it. Because, you know, if you're just going to graduate school and you're taking a class at a time and you're not going to realistically finish in any amount of time that's going to be worth a damn, you know, you just kind of have to ask yourself, like, why am I doing this? So I got to a point where I'm like, either I'm going to stop doing this or I'm going to go into it full time and just see where it leads. And at that time, you know, this position came up at the university for a graduate teaching assistant, which I had not known had existed. My graduate director told me about it, and she encouraged me to apply for it. And I got in. You know, I wrote a cover letter, and kind of they saw my transcripts, and yeah, they kind of admitted me very, very quickly. I think it was like about 2 weeks from me sending in the application that they almost immediately alerted me that I had made it in. And so, and I was like really ecstatic about this, because a graduate teaching position, essentially what that is they pay for all your classes. They take care of all your tuition. And at the same time, you also get to teach college. You get to teach freshman comp. So it was kind of giving me exactly what I wanted. And I found out when I got into the program and I started doing it that a lot of the other graduate teaching assistants they sort of consider having to teach in a college classroom like kind of a hurdle they have to jump over, like something like some unpleasantry that they have to endure, you know, as a part of the process. But I really, really enjoyed it because, you know, it's weird to say. It's like what happens in college, one thing I've kind of found out is that you get a lot of, you know, really good, I don't know, it's the flip side, okay? So, like, in high school, for instance, you get a lot of really good educators, you know, like people who know how to be in the classroom and know how to be in front of students and know all these teaching strategies and how to engage them with, like, multi-sensory activities that are going to, like, kind of target them on one or all of the four quadrants, right? You have educators that are trained in this and that know this and all that, okay? But they don't necessarily know the intricacies of their content area. They may not know all of literary theory, for instance. Like they may not, you know, be, you know, they may be incredibly vague on historical theory and lenses and research and all that, and they're basically teaching from textbooks and curriculum that's been handed down to them, okay? And what I found in college, it's like the complete opposite, is that you've got these professors who are brilliant researchers and have written books and know their content in and out, and in a lot of ways have kind of shaped the direction of the fields that they're teaching in, right? But they're not very good teachers. You know, they get up there and they kind of lecture and maybe they'll answer a question or two and they assign papers and they grade those papers and that's it, right? And so one of the things that I found I had a leg up on very quickly when I started doing this graduate teaching assistantship position is that not only was I kind of coming in with a unique pedigree of being, of having been a high school teacher, but I was also now kind of becoming very well versed in my content area, which was English literature. And so it just became something that I really enjoyed mastering, like in the truest sense of the word. I kind of tackled that master's of art thing, right? So, yeah. So I finally finished a few weeks ago this program. It feels so weird to say that because I haven't done a lot of shows since I've been in this program. It was very much like the very first time that I ever took a very long extended hiatus from this show was in the fall of 2012 when I was doing my student teaching. And, you know, I was having to work 9-hour days and not getting paid for any of it. And Monday through Friday, you know, working with students as a student teacher. And, you know, ever since then, every hiatus I've ever taken from the show, which, again, there have been a lot of them, right? The longest one being between about, I guess, summer of 2017 and I think March of 2020. I started doing shows again during the middle of COVID. That was a very long time. I was pretty much sure that I was done podcasting permanently because, you know, having that full-time teaching job just completely took it out of me. You know, and I may obviously have hiatuses in the future, but I have not been able to, like, concentrate on anything else other than finishing graduate school for the last year and a half. I just kind of have that mind where I just have to focus on that one thing. And I wish I wasn't like that, right? I wish I really could compartmentalize my interest because I have so many of them. And a lot of times what happens is those interests kind of stack on top of each other. And I end up not doing any of them, right? So... and sometimes they're better than others where I'm able to kind of juggle multiple things, at one time, but you know, grad school was not that. Grad school was absolutely not that. Right. So, but I'm finished now. I'm back doing a show and I'm doing a toast to it. Right. Yeah. And I just lit up a cigar now. And I wish I could say this is a celebration cigar, but no, like the whiskey, it's just my cigar of the night, right? Yeah, now that I'm finished with graduate school, I really need to get rid of these things. You know, it's so tough. I don't know. I don't know what to say when you're studying English literature. And particularly American literature, my God, right? And all these people that you're sort of like revering and studying. You know, like, what was it? A couple of summers ago, I went to William Faulkner's house, you know, like in Oxford, Mississippi. And, what does he call it? Roanoke? Is that it? Yeah. And yeah, right there is just like picture after picture, wall after wall of pictures of like William Faulkner at his typewriter. and he's like working on Absalom or something, you know, and he's got like a nice little finger of whiskey there and a pipe that he's puffing on. And he's got all these quotes that said, like, you know, every person has their stock in trade or their tools of the trade. I've found that mine over the years have been a little bit of tobacco and a pinch of whiskey. Right. Yeah, these are not something that the William Faulkner's publishers, if he were alive today, you know, and hadn't died virtually of alcoholism, they would probably be like, hey, William, maybe keep your habits to yourself. Maybe don't go around telling the kids that, you know, writers have to drink and smoke to get through their days. But, you know, and it, like, yeah, I have to totally admit, I've had a few cigars, right, in the past year or so, working on my graduate thesis. That's what's consumed most of my time, and it's been an incredibly stressful process to get through doing this graduate thesis. You know, the graduate thesis kind of looks different for every program that you go through, but in my case, I had to pick a book and write about it and turn out something like a 6,000 page article, or 6,000 pages, 6,000 word article, which is roughly about 25 pages. And doesn't sound so bad, right? But the thing about it is, like, I took this assignment very seriously because I want to be able to publish this article. Again, one of my reasons for going through the graduate school was so that I could become like a part of the conversation, you know, so that I could be like one of those professors that actually like kind of moves the needle on, you know, critical discussions of certain books that I really hold dear. And I do want to be able to, you know, to write about books. I want to be able to kind of have that kind of life. Right. I just enjoy it. I really do. But that's to say that I don't really know how to do it. I'm still not really sure I know how to do it, but you know, I definitely didn't know how to do it when I came into the program. And that's one of the reasons why I entered the program, is I wanted to be able to know and to understand how to write about books. And in order to do that, there's all this like front end work that you have to do. Like, if you're going to write about a book in a serious way that you're going to publish in an academic journal, I mean, I feel like this goes without saying, but you have to know all of the conversations that are going on about that book, and not just about that book, but about that author, about that genre, right? About that period of literature. And you don't even have to know about, like, or you need to know, in addition to knowing all that, you also have to know about, like, what are the previous conversations that have brought us up to, you know, this point, right? And so I have just been submerging myself, absorbing myself in the past year, with background research, really before I even wrote a single page of my thesis. You know, I had read probably like 600, 700 pages, right, of stuff. And that's not even as much as I really should have. You know, I probably should have read a lot more, and I did read a lot more as I was writing the article. But at some point I had to kind of call it and be like, you know, right, okay. It got to a point, right, where it's like, you know, if you sit down and you're, like, ready to write, you know, a lot of times, like, people procrastinate by, like, playing video games or by, like, watching a television show or something like that. What I ended up doing when I didn't know what to write, I would procrastinate by like reading more articles, right? By like reading more research, you know, and it just, and just to try and be, I don't know, constructive and passive at the same time, right? It's a compromise. So, but yeah, the biggest decision I faced of graduate school was like, what was I going to write my thesis on? Okay. And, when I started the program, I came in with like really high aspirations for what I was going to write about. And I was thinking about like, I can write about anything, like any book in the world I can write about, you know, it's like been really getting into Thomas Pynchon lately. I can write about Thomas Pynchon and, you know, Against the Day or Gravity's Rainbow or something, or I can write about, like I'm really familiar with, you know, Arthur Miller's The Crucible because I've read it so many times and I can really talk endlessly about that play. And so I was really excited about it. And then a little bit of reality set in when, you know, it became when I was required to choose a thesis advisor. And a thesis advisor is like a member of the faculty, a professor who you work very closely with, ostensibly, to write the thesis. Somebody who just like looks at pages periodically, ideally like once every couple of weeks or so. And they just make sure you're doing a good job, like you're not wasting your time, you're writing in an educated way that shows that you've done your research and all that. And that you're just not going astray. So the thesis advisor is whoever you choose as your advisor, they have to know a lot about the book that you're writing about. Okay, so this limited me quite a lot because the faculty in the English department at the university doesn't really have anybody that's into the stuff that I'm into. So this is a major problem. Like, you know, they didn't really have anybody who could work with me on 20th century modernism and postmodernism. Not to say they don't have anybody on that staff. They did, and I found them, but their interest came quite a few paces away from my interest. And, So I have like suddenly this like big list of books now that I wanted to do narrow down to a much smaller list of books. Okay. And so from those, that much, you know, smaller list of books, I now suddenly have to choose a book that I am comfortable spending the next year with, because, when you write about a book, obviously you're going to be spending so much time with it that, you know, it's, you have to make sure that you enjoy it enough to where at the point that you least enjoy it, you still really like it. So that was a hard decision to make. So I finally chose a book by the American author Cormac McCarthy. Cormac McCarthy, like most people know him because he wrote the book that the 2007 film No Country for Old Men is based on. They also know him. His like most popular book is The Road, which came out in 2007 and won the Pulitzer Prize, and they made it into a movie with Viggo Mortensen. He wrote most of his career in like complete obscurity, right? He began writing in the 1960s and didn't even have a book that reached any kind of bestseller list until 1992 with All the Pretty Horses. And his masterpiece is probably considered Blood Meridian, which he wrote in 1985. The book that I chose is probably his like most obscure novel, but the best one of his that I've read, which is called Sutri, published in 1979. This book flopped so hard when it came out that it went almost immediately out of print until like the early 90s. So, you know, and, even, you know, yeah, when you talk to people who know about Cormac McCarthy, a lot of them don't know about Suttree. It's and I didn't pick it for that reason, because it's very obscure. Well, I guess in a way I did, because what I found out about Suttree after reading the novel twice and then, like, going on databases to see what's been written about it is that there's actually a very, very small catalog of scholarship and research that's been done on this book. So that's really good. I found a good intersection, because suddenly I've got an author that everybody knows about. And he also died right around the time I had to make my decision on what book I was going to write. Because it was like, okay, so he died. I feel like the universe is giving me a sign. I need to write about him, right? He died last June at, I believe, the age of 90. So yeah, I found an author that was much revered in the American literary canon, who also has a book that not a lot of people know about. And when you find those two things, suddenly you've, like, got something that's interesting that you can, that, you know, that, that has some validity, right? That you can very easily find things to write about in the book that nobody's written about before. And that's the goal. Okay. So, yeah. So I decided to choose Cormac McCarthy's Suttree. So the thesis advisor I had was, you know, into mostly 19th century American literature, but in some ways 20th century as well. So he's, like, the closest I got. And he had read the book before, but years earlier, when he had just gotten out of graduate school himself, right? So if I could make one decision to go back and change, it would probably be picking that book. And the thing is, like, here I am nearly a year after I chose that book as my, as what I was going to write about. And I got a really good thesis out of it. I'm very happy with the results. I'm really glad that I did it. And I want to expand on it and keep writing about it. But I also did not get as much guidance as I could have gotten, because I chose a book that my thesis advisor did not know much about, was not as familiar with, right? So he kept on, he's a big Hawthorne scholar, so he writes a lot on Hawthorne as well as Herman Melville. And so he was really trying to get me to write about Nathaniel Hawthorne's The House of the Seven Gables, which is a book that I enjoy. And I wrote a paper about it in one of his classes, and he wanted me to expand on it as my thesis project. But I could not see spending, you know, 8 to 12 months with Nathaniel Hawthorne. I mean, you know, the guy's a fine writer, but I just couldn't do it. And also, I wanted to do something 20th century American literature, and specifically 70s. I just found, like, the 1970s. Is the most fascinating American decade to me. Maybe it's because it was just, like, all this stuff that happened right before I came into the world, right? But I just find it's an amazing and interesting decade. And even though the book Suttree came out in the late 70s, it was most of the action of the book takes place in the 1950s. But it's still got this very 70s sensibility. That was one of the things that I focused on in my thesis, right? Is, you know, some books are written in certain times that are about earlier times, but reflect the times they're written in, right? So, and what Suttree is doing, the book, is you know, kind of forecasting the economic downturns of the 1970s and, you know, kind of telling the reader, like, the signs were there all along, if only you paid attention. Okay. So, I'm not going to get into, like, what my thesis was about, like, all the intricacies and details about it. And I'm going to be spending the summer reworking it so that I can submit it for publication in the Cormac McCarthy Journal or some other journal that will have it. But I will eventually publish it on my own online, and I'll let you know when that happens. But all you need to know right now is that You know, the requirements was that it had to be at least 6,000 words. I ended up getting about 10,000 words out of it. So yeah, that's right. You heard that right. I've got to trim about 4,000 words off of this thing in order to submit it for publication. It's going to take a while, but, you know, I finished it on time, and there were a lot of setbacks in it. And really, I can honestly say, even though I had written probably about 30 to 40 pages, by the time I got COVID back in February, those 30 to 40 pages were essentially just like all reworkings of the same four or five paragraphs. So by the time I got COVID in February, I really only had about three pages that I was like actually comfortable with. So yeah, like after my big COVID week, I just really got to it and just kind of wrote nonstop, like staying up very long nights, drinking lots of coffee, and yes, smoking cigars. And, right. And it came down to the wire, you know, it came down to the wire. It's like the thing was due March 29th. And I think I got it in at midnight. And I think I got it in at probably eight or 9 o'clock, you know, on March 29th and got it in. So, that obviously wasn't it though. Turning it in, submitting it was not it. I also had to do a thesis defense. Okay. And, this is one of the weirdest experiences you can have in your entire life outside of maybe, you know, going to jail and then like coming up before a parole board. It sounds really scary. I mean, what you do is you go in and you're sitting there in front of your, you know, thesis committee, you know, composed of your thesis advisor, your two committee chairs, you know, two other professors in the English department who've also read your thesis and are ready to give you feedback, and your graduate director. And also anybody is welcome to come to this thing. Fortunately, nobody's really interested in coming to them. So I had a couple of other graduate students there to support me. And my wife, Jessica, was also kind enough to come as well. But yeah, you're basically sitting at the head of this very long conference table and everybody's there surrounding you. And they're just kind of grilling you for like an hour on your thesis. And they're, you know, kind of poking some holes in it and just kind of critiquing it and things like that. And it's kind of a foregone conclusion that they're going to pass you on it. It's not really like, you go in and you do all this work and then they're like, well, we're sorry, we can't pass you. And they're going to tell you this in front of everybody. It's kind of like a foregone conclusion that you're going to do fine. I passed my defense. I got through it. I went out in the hall for a few minutes while the committee conferred, and then they invited us all back in and they're like, congratulations, Master Booty. They like all laughed at that. It's Master Booty. Yeah, I know. It almost sounds like something else, but so, and it feels like that just feels like weeks. I guess it is weeks ago. It feels much longer than weeks ago, honestly. It's like my thesis defense was on, actually, yeah, that was on the 29th. I had to get it turned in a couple weeks before that. But my thesis defense was on March 29th. And yeah, ever since then, I've just been like finishing teaching classes. And yeah, for the last week, I've just been waiting for, I guess, tomorrow. I don't need to go to this graduation ceremony tomorrow. I really do not. But at the same time, a lot of people have supported me in this process. Most notably, my wife, Jessica, right? My parents, my mother-in-law's in town. She's supported me quite a lot, right? And they seem to be wanting this experience to go and sit in a hot arena, you know, for 2 hours and watch all these people walk across the stage to pick up a an envelope that's basically just a representation of your degree. The real one's mailed to you a few weeks later. And they want to see all that just to see me. So, you know, right. And I went on a couple weeks ago and I ordered, like, I spent $200 on a cap and gown that I'm never going to wear again. And putting this stuff on, it's like, I swear, man, they squeeze the money out of you until the minute you walk across that stage. It really is amazing, right? Like, surprise when you go. I'd be surprised tomorrow if I go up there onto the stage and, like, shake the dean's hand and the dean doesn't, like, reach into my pockets and try and, like, just look around among all the lint for quarters and things, you know. So I don't know if that's going to happen. I wonder if there's going to be any, like, protest or anything tomorrow at the college. You know, there's, like, all these protests right now all over the country, mainly at, like, Columbia in New York. You know, these pro-Palestinian protests. So, like, I guess to a degree they kind of have a point. I mean, I know that, like, Hamas killed or captured a couple thousand people, Israelis, but Israel since then has kind of killed like 32,000, a lot of them women and children. Yeah, I mean, I see your point. I think, like, what the problem is that a lot of these pro-Palestinian protesters are using some anti-Semitic slurs and kind of crossing that gray line into the rhetoric of 1930s, you know, Germany. So, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see any of that tomorrow. I've been, like, teaching at the university for a couple of years now and going to classes there. It's not really one of those places like you see on the news or you hear about in the news where, you know, people protest speakers that come to campus that don't necessarily agree with them. Or I think it's a pretty open, like, free speech campus, from what I've seen. This doesn't mean that this stuff doesn't happen when I'm not there. I mean, I don't know. But I haven't seen any of that. And, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe tomorrow there will be, like, a few people there wearing, like, support Palestine pins or something like that. And I get that. I mean, it's like, it's just an incredibly thorny issue. And, you know, you can't knock people who just are not comfortable with, like, Palestinians being killed left and right by a far well-equipped and, you know, nation with the support of the U.S. military behind them. You know. So, anyway. Yeah, this is a nice cigar and drinking a toast to finishing. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me here tonight. This is just a small little show. Stay tuned for more. Be doing more shows. More shows of the Midnight Citizen coming up this summer. Yeah. Everybody's been asking me what next. What are you going to do next? I don't know. I'm set up for the rest of the year. Like, I'm teaching summer camp, and I'm working all summer at this, like, reading academy for middle and high school students. So I'll be doing that. And I'm adjuncting at the university in the fall. teaching English again. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be good. Beyond that, I don't know. I've got some applications out all over the country for, you know, to teach college. I want to continue to teach college. I really do. I don't want to go back to teaching high school. I've done that already. You know, it's like, and I think I've said this before on the show that, like, what I like so much about teaching college over high school is that teaching college is really like teaching distilled down to its like purest form, where you plan a lesson, you go in and teach that lesson, you give the students an assignment, they do the assignment, you grade the paper, right? And you can't deal with parents legally. And just, I don't know, to me, like, I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that, but from what I've experienced from the last year of teaching, it just, it's been so drama-free and so liberating. It really has been. It's like my graduate director was just kind of rolling her eyes a little bit, and I don't blame her. When I told her that I was going into adjuncting, because they don't want to hear that. Like, these people who have worked with you and kind of gotten you through your thesis and gotten you to this point where you're ready to move on, they don't want to, like, they don't want you to just stay at the university and continue adjuncting forever. And I totally get that. And she was kind of rolling her eyes the other day when I said that. And I was like, I know. I'm well aware of the adjunct trap. You know, just teaching semester after semester the same thing and never moving forward, you know, with this education that you've gotten. And it can, in a way, be like a bit of a slap in the face to all the people who have helped you along the way. And I don't want to do that. I'm doing it strictly out of really just like having no place else to go right now, but also actively pursuing other jobs. You know, looking around, actually getting a full-time position on a faculty somewhere. Where, yes, I know that it's going to be very hard for me to get one of those jobs, right? Because you are, and so I'm basically back to just being in 2010 again. You know, because you are going to be competing with people with PhDs, right? Which is another level of school. God damn. My graduate director was telling me, she was like encouraging me, like, go get your PhD. And I was like, you know, and I kept telling her, it's like, I understand that, but that's 5 more years of school. It's got to end sometime. I've got to like cut it off at some point. You know, I'm going to be like 47 by the time I get my PhD. I'm going to be 47 and looking for a job. I mean, can you imagine anything more depressing than that? And she says, well, you're going to be 47 anyway. I guess so. Yeah, she's got a point there. Well, the problem is that the university does not offer a PhD program. So the closest one is in Tuscaloosa, which is where I got my bachelor's degree. Right. So I would be looking at, you know, 5 years of commuting down to Tuscaloosa, which is about an hour and 15-minute drive, one way, right? So, or I would have to move, right, with Jessica, either down to Tuscaloosa or someplace else that would have me as a PhD candidate. And then, say I get my PhD, I get out of the program, what happens then? PhD programs, you know, PhD jobs, like jobs for college professors on a tenure track, they don't just like fall from the sky, right? So, at least not now anyway. So I told Jessica tonight at dinner, because she was kind of saying, like, if you really want to get your PhD, do it. I'll support you. And I told her, it's like, I understand, but it's not just the PhD. It's like all these other decisions that are wrapped up inside of that. I mean, if I get a PhD and I'm out in 5 years with a doctorate, that almost 100% means that we're going to have to move somewhere. We're going to have to leave all the roots that we have here in town, right? Leave all of our friends, obviously our family. I don't know if that's in the cards, right? So yeah, I don't know what's next. Maybe I'll just become a professional insurance fraudster or something like that. I'll talk about that next time. Yeah, I'm sitting in the spot right now. This $20 patio furniture that I got on Facebook Marketplace has taken the place of my motorcycle, which was stolen the week I got COVID. So somebody took advantage of my dire condition, my medical condition, and stole my motorcycle. But somehow I profited off of it. I don't know. It's a story for another time, another Midnight Citizen. Until next time, which should be very soon, keep your eyes open.